Since 2022, Kentucky has had 19 weather and climate disasters with losses exceeding $1 billion, including 7 in 2024 alone. That's according to federal data. Now Kentucky has become the first state in the nation to adopt technology that officials say will help when the next disaster strikes. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me in this recorded interview to explain the technology and how it could help are Geospatial Information Officer for the Commonwealth Office of Technology, Kent Annis. Welcome to the program, Kent.
Thanks for having me.
And Boone County Emergency Management Director, Kevin Vogelpohl. Thanks for being here, Kevin.
No problem. Thank you.
Kevin, recovery efforts are still underway in Texas. What are the challenges that emergency teams face when they're rescuing and recovering as many people as they can as quickly as possible?
A lot of the challenges relate to availability of manpower and equipment, the danger that is associated with changing landscapes, especially resulting from things like floods and tornadoes that can change the geography of an area topographically. It can shift creeks, different things like that, and make things very unsafe and unsettling. And just overall financial constraints can really hinder especially smaller communities.
Kent, as I mentioned, Kentucky has just been walloped by weather and climate disasters over the past few years. Can you explain this new technology the state has adopted?
What we've done, and in almost all states, and especially large urban areas across the nation, collect aerial photography. And this aerial photography provides first responders and engineers, surveyors, everybody with a lot of information they need to better do their job. What Kentucky has acquired, though, is not only the traditional top-down view aerial photography, but also a view of every spot in the state from all four cardinal directions. That just gives us another level of situational awareness, another perspective on how we can access a given site or structure. And, once again, just additional information above and beyond what we can see in traditional aerial photography. That's the big difference with what Kentucky has recently acquired.
And Ken, explain how that could help during natural disasters.
Well, a lot of this is being able to, number one, know what was there beforehand. As Kevin noted, we're all familiar with the geography and the way things look before a disaster. So having that snapshot in time before a disaster is very important. And what that does is when first responders hit the ground, once again, they can look at a given site or a structure or an area and figure out how can we get into this the easiest? What's the easiest point of access? How can we get people out? And things of that sort. So once again, it's this additional perspective that it gives these first responders and anybody in an emergency response effort.
Kevin, how will local offices like yours be using this?
Well, one of the things that is always discussed in emergency management is all disasters start and end locally. So having tools like this available at the local level provide us with a number of resources. We can utilize these, as Kent referenced to, with a starting point for mapping based upon where something used to be or where something currently is. We can also use to provide waypoints and mapping programs for missing persons or looking for missing equipment, utilities, different things like that. But it also helps us to potentially provide our citizens with waypoints and areas that they're familiar with that we can show them from above that says, go to this location for safety, go to this location to obtain water and food or shelter or whatever that may be.
Kent, how did you go about getting all these images from all these different viewpoints?
Well, the legislature appropriated funds in the 2022 regular session, and that money was used to hire a contractor and a large number of surveyors. And this contractor, along with subcontractors with lots of planes, there were six or seven planes in the sky at many times acquiring this new imagery. And they have particular flight patterns that they do. And these flight patterns over the state were coordinated in such a way that they could get the most work done in a leaf off season, because that's when we want to capture the data. So it took a good 2 years, which honestly is very ambitious. We didn't know whether it could be accomplished in 2 years or not. We expected it would take three, but they pulled it off in 2 years, and all the data is finally in-house and is now fully distributed.
You just mentioned that these images were captured during leaf-off season. This is probably going to sound like a dumb question, but does that mean in the fall when the trees have dropped their leaves?
Correct. That's when we can start looking at it. Aerial photography needs to be acquired, as I noted, when the leaves are off the trees and when the sun angle is correct. If the sun angle is not right, if it's too low in the sky, what we end up with is a lot of shadows. And these shadows, you know, they make it more difficult for people to tell what's going on the ground. So you've got about 3 weeks in the fall when you can acquire aerial photography. And then starting again in late January, early February, through leaf off period, which is usually the end of April, that's the best flying season. You've got leaves aren't on the trees yet. Hopefully you've got clear skies. And the sun angle, once again, the sun angle is going to make sure that we're getting the least amount of shadow. So it's very important that you get it at the right time of year.
Couldn't the landscape look pretty different during different times of year, though, Kent?
Correct. That's why we like to get it all at the same time, preferably in the spring. And, coordinating and making sure that we do that on a consistent basis is what gives us this, I'll say, consistent look and feel for the imagery. We're very accustomed to seeing it in leaf-off conditions. And that's what lets us, get the best look at the ground, get the best look at roads and things like that, especially in a state like Kentucky where there's a lot of rural areas and a lot of tree cover. It's extremely important that we have that leaf-off state.
Sure. And Kent, how often do you all update these images? Is this something, it seems like a lot of work to do in a very short amount of time that you have just the right conditions. Is this something that you plan to update regularly? Because, I imagine roads can change, different things can be built from year to year, that sort of thing.
You're absolutely right. And, changes occur in the built and natural environment all the time. We drive up and down the road and we see these changes. So it's important that we get a refresh. And typically the urban areas in Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana, that type of area, what we like to do is, they like to get something every 3 to 4 years. That is, you're getting a refresh every 3 to 4 years. And so it's pretty industry standard time frame. And what we try to do is coordinate with funding, obviously, and our program partners to make sure that everybody's on board and everybody's going to, be ready for this particular season. And, it takes staging of planes and pilots and everybody in Kentucky so that they're here. And when there's a clear day, they can fly. Because if there's clouds in the sky or there's snow on the ground, there's no planes in the air.
We're talking in this recorded interview about new technology that Kentucky officials say will help rescue and recovering efforts during natural disasters. So, Kevin, have you all made use of any of this imaging yet in Boone County?
We have internally in our office. One of the things that we're tasked with on an annual basis is updating our emergency operations plan. And part of that is incident-specific plans, and some of those go into detail with severe weather, flooding, different things like that. And this year is the first year we've been able to utilize those mapping programs and the products produced to help us enhance the plans that we have, maybe provide us with a more pencil-thin line, so to speak, of what we need to do instead of a broader scope. It can help us narrow some things down as we have a better idea of floodplains and areas of concern or areas of higher hazard that may be impacted by certain different types of severe weather.
Kent, how has the state as a whole used this imaging now that you've gotten it? Has the state been able to put it to use?
Oh, yeah. It's pretty amazing. And I'll be honest, we're surprised almost on a weekly basis with all the great things that folks are doing with it. The very first thing we did is we made sure that it was available within the 911 data portal with all the dispatch offices across the state. And so when they click on an address point, they have a symbol, they have a button right above it, and they can click on that button and they can go right to that particular point, that address point on that home. And then they can see that home, not only from above, but from those different directions. So those folks, the folks in emergency management, you know, all the people in those sorts of roles, we wanted to make sure they had access to it and understood how to use it. But we're seeing it used, you know, within the transportation cabinet. There are broad uses within the energy and environment cabinet. State Board of Elections is using it, you know, to make sure, is this house in this district or not? Things of that sort. And then the uses in the private sector. I think those are some very compelling uses as well. Most recently, we heard from some of the rural electric cooperatives, and they have databases with the locations of every pole and, all of these big towers that you see, transmission towers. And they have tied this aerial photography to the location of all of their assets. And so, you know, they can look at a pole or they can look at any of these big towers from all these different sides. They can measure them. You know, if there's been a storm come through an area, they can look at, you know, this is what it looked like before it hit. They're going to know where these poles are and how to get to those in a safe and efficient manner. So the uses are broad. And we could spend a whole hour just talking about all the ways that folks are leveraging it.
Yeah, it sounds like it. You know, I mentioned at the top of our discussion the terrible flooding in Texas. Kent, what parts of Kentucky are more prone to flooding and flash flooding? And have these images helped state officials better identify those areas?
Well, eastern Kentucky, where we have, of course, the biggest change in topography, the most relief, where water gets really concentrated in the valleys, that's one of the biggest areas of concern for the Commonwealth. But also, you know, you've got these broad, flat areas out in the western part of the state, but it doesn't take much water to flood those and all the areas around, along the Ohio River. So the aerial photography, as it relates to the floodplains and things like that, it's more of providing this, what it looked like before, before a flood. What we also have that is available to all these users is our elevation data, which is LIDAR derived. And the LIDAR data we have, that is what is used to map these floodplains and try to nail them down as best as we can. So, for example, after the 2022 floods, we were able to get additional money from the feds, and we're able to fly all of those flood counties in additional time with LIDAR. And so we got a before and after view of the landscape, just like Kevin talked about in his first remarks. And this before and after view is very telling. It not only tells us, gives us a good story of what happened, but it gives us a plan or helps us plan for where we can build back or where we shouldn't build back and how we most effectively design infrastructure, for example, to go back in behind these natural disasters.
And for people who aren't familiar with LIDAR, can you just explain what that is a little bit?
That means light and detection ranging. And imagine you're scanning everything in the built-in natural environment from the sky. And so you've got this big scan of everything. You can see every tree, every structure. If a car was sitting in a driveway or a truck was backed up to a dock, you can see all of that. And what we're able to do is pull the ground out of that. And by having that ground surface, we're able to model and say, okay, if a drop of water hits here, where is it going to go? What velocity is it going to reach on its path and things of that sort? So LIDAR is a, like I said, it's not something that you can readily look at like aerial photography and it makes a lot of sense to you, but used with the right data and used with the right software, we can do a lot with it for, like I said, modeling our landscape, learning how floods could impact us, and then particularly, how do we build back afterwards and how do we do it in a safe and efficient and effective manner?
Kevin, you mentioned that in Boone County, you've already been looking at these images that we've been talking about. D- Do you recommend that people check out these images of their own properties or their neighborhoods? I mean, does it help in any way to be prepared for a natural disaster, to kind of get a view of what everything looks like from all these angles?
We would definitely encourage the public that if they have the ability to look at these, to definitely take a look at them and just be familiar with your surroundings, where higher elevations are that are areas of refuge or lower areas are that you may need to avoid. But we also, in some of the planning, I believe our planning and zoning department utilizes these, as well as our GIS department within the county and other agencies across Northern Kentucky are really kind of leaning on this newer technology to take a look at what it can provide us in scopes, even outside of the emergency planning and disaster realm and into normal everyday planning, everyday responses for fire departments, law enforcement agencies, public works departments, and the list goes on.
We've been talking about planning in advance and being prepared and knowing all these elevations and what property and land looks like before a disaster. But, you know, when you think about the Texas flooding, it struck overnight. People were caught off guard. Kevin, what can you tell us about first alert warnings in Boone County or even Northern Kentucky as a whole? Are there limitations with the system for when something hits?
So these types of warning systems that are out there, Boone County and Kenton County combined together, and we provide a product called Code Red. It's a third-party product. Campbell County uses the RAFE technology, and it's a sign-up service that you can receive notifications from the National Weather Service for whatever you choose. You get to pick what you can choose to have alerts from, whether that be severe weather, tornado warnings, flash floods, to law enforcement activity in your area, hazardous materials releases, whatever it is that we put out. The Weather Service products automatically activate if you choose to receive those. The other products, we have to send those alerts out ourselves. And then also, everybody's phones, I don't know if everybody like mine today went off a couple times for an Ian alert in the state of Kentucky. That's something that is brand new. A couple weeks ago, we got an Ashanti alert. There's also the Amber alert. These are part of the WEA, the WEA, and the Emergency Alert Warning System from the federal government and FEMA that they put out for the Emergency Alert Network. And it will notify you as well of certain things that are completely built into your phone. And we also recommend, if you don't want to sign up for one of our services, at least sign up for the notification products from the local news organizations, the National Weather Service, obtain a weather radio. Those are inexpensive ways to receive notifications when there are severe weather and disaster events in your area.
And I guess, are those designed to be loud enough to wake somebody up if you've got your phone next to you? I know that Ian alert certainly would have been loud enough to wake me up if it had come in the middle of the night.
Yes, and it's some of it's dependent upon the volume on your phone, but mostly it will wake you up in the middle of the night. And if you have a weather radio, I can tell you we have one in our office at work. They are very loud, and they definitely get your attention.
And those weather radios, they don't necessarily have to be plugged in, do they? I mean, are those battery operated?
Correct. They have a battery backup. We have one. We make sure that all of our schools, all of our large public buildings are equipped with those in the event that they do lose power and they lose the ability to receive notifications. They can still at least get that over the radio waves.
What are some of the things you recommend people have in an emergency kit? What should we have prepared that we can grab quickly if we need to leave our homes and you know, very quickly and might not be able to return for a while? Are there some essentials that you advise people to have ready?
We always tell people, number one, the best thing you can have is information. So staying alert and staying ahead, watching the news, listening to weather reports for when severe weather is predicted in the area or the possibility of something occurring is predicted in the area, and then have things ready like a case or two of water, medications, phone chargers, the portable power devices that are available to charge your phone. Try to make sure your vehicle is full of gas ahead of time. Blankets, changes of clothing, canned foods or foods that are not easily perishable. We always tell people to try to be prepared for 72 hours of not being able to find assistance. And if you have to leave your home and go to safety, make sure you figure that out ahead of time. Where are you going to go? Make sure that those people or that location is available to you at that time, and it's not something that could be dependent upon hours of opening or someone being home and you not having access to that facility.
Kent, is there any other new technology that Kentucky is looking to adopt? Is there any talk about like next generation 911 or anything like that?
Oh, yes. Kentucky is well on its way to implementing next generation 911. I believe all but a county or two have gotten their mapping data turned in now. So we're really close to being able to turn over the switch to a full next generation 911 effort all across the state. As a part of this next generation 911 effort, the Commonwealth has empowered every single dispatch with a 911 data portal. And within this data portal, the users are able to see on one side the calls that are coming in. And then on the other side, they have access to a map that shows the pinpoints where that call is coming in. And then they have an option over to the right to turn on and off dozens, and I don't literally mean dozens, of different map layers so that they can kind of look at the scenario at hand. You know, if somebody's drowning in a lake, they can turn on boat ramps and figure out, well, where can they get a boat in the water, that sort of thing. So, yes, next generation 911 is going to be a reality in Kentucky. It's well underway. It's well-funded, and it is managed by some great folks.
Is that something you're looking forward to in Boone County, Kevin?
Yes, we already have some of the next-gen 911 stuff in place here, and we're currently in the process of upgrading our computer-aided dispatch system. We have entertained bids and are in the process of going through that to upgrade us to the next bit of technology that's out there to be able to provide us with everything that we can.
Okay, well, I've been talking with Geospatial Information Officer for the Commonwealth Office of Technology, Kent Annis, and Boone County Emergency Management Director, Kevin Vogelpohl. Thank you both so much for your time today. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez-Cornu. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.